Well, hello, this is Bob Sutherland from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, Reuters, Triangle Business Journal, and a few small pieces from what's left of the business section of the Raleigh News and Observer. Well, they've been after POTUS, they're saying today, President of the United States, Donald Trump. They've been after him since the way back when he was running for office for his income tax returns. President Trump on Wednesday defended the more than $1 billion he reported in business losses between 1985 and 1994. That's a previously undisclosed amount revealed in New York Times investigation as a best practices that other real estate developers have also used. Yet as he tried to explain in a pair of Twitter posts that showing losses for tax purposes was considered a sport, that's in quotes, among real estate developers like himself, the president also said the Times account was a highly inaccurate fake news hit job. Hear that again. It was not immediately clear what specifically in the Times investigation Trump disputed. The article reported the staggering figure of $1.17 billion in losses between 1985 and 1994. That's an amount calculated from 10 years of his tax information obtained by the Times. It also raised the questions about the image that Trump presented of himself and whether he is a tarnished, not triumphant businessman. In some years, Trump appears to have lost more money than any other single taxpayer in the IRS sampling of high earners. Trump has also portrayed himself as a self-made billionaire. The new details about the president's steep financial losses provide the fullest picture yet of his taxes, yet his defense of the losses he reported in the 80s and 90s will fuel House Democrats in their fight to get his tax returns for the past 6 years. Well, while we own the president, he is taunting China. On the eve of trade talks, President Trump taunted China Wednesday morning, saying a pair of tweets that Chinese negotiators were attempting to drag out trade negotiations until a very weak Democrat was back in the White House and insisting he would be happy to keep tariffs on Chinese exports rather than make a deal. Trump's tweets came as Chinese negotiators are headed to the United States to try to salvage a trade agreement that has fallen apart, suggesting a long road may be ahead. His comments are likely to further inflame tensions as Chinese officials, including Vice Premier Liu He, one of China's top economic officials, and a close confidant of the country's leader, Xi Jinping, as he joins talks in Washington on Thursday. A quick resolution now seems unlikely. Significant gaps remain between the two sides, and Trump suggested he is ready to impose higher tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods. Well, the stock market climbed back a little yesterday. It's up 224, up to 25,967.33. And the S&P is down 4.63 to 28.79.42. A lot of that, I'm told, is attributable to these Chinese negotiations. Well, right here at home, Wake County manager eyes property tax hike around 10%. Wake County residents could see that under the county manager's recommended budget, the 6.36% increase, which includes 3.8 cents approved last fall, would cover increased funding to the Wake County public school system and other county properties. The proposed budget would raise the county tax rate from 65.44 cents per 100 of assessed property value to 71.8 cents per 100. To give you an idea of the impact, The owner of a $300,000 house would pay $2,154 in county property taxes, and that's a $191 increase. The Wake County Commissioners got their first look at County Manager David Ellis's $1.47 billion budget on Monday night. He said, "I've spent the past year in my new role analyzing the demand for the core county services we provide to the public. My budget recommendation reflects the priority needs we must address to deliver those services at the level our growing population expects and as state regulations require. The main drivers of the budget include the county's population growth, new state regulations, and unfunded state mandates," according to Ellis's budget presentation. And while sales tax and property tax revenues increased by 3%, resulting in $31.1 million in new revenue, there was an $83 million in budget request, including $48.9 million from the school system. Voters backed the 3.8% property tax increase to fund a total of $1.1 billion in bonds to fund the Wake County Public School System and Wake Technical Community Schools construction, and the county's park, open space, and greenway efforts. Well, vinyl window maker Pella Corporation plans to launch its first manufacturing plant in North Carolina after receiving an incentive package from the state of North Carolina. The company plans to open the facility in Reidsville, a city of about 14,000 people north of Greensboro, up in Rockingham County, and they'll hire 124 people over the next 3 years. The total incentive package will be worth up to about $1.9 million if the Iowa-based Pella meets manufacturing and investment goals. The incentive was approved at a state economic investment committee meeting in Raleigh on Tuesday. Well, Google announced from Mountain View, California, the corporate headquarters updates for its artificial intelligence voice assistant and new privacy tools to give people more control over how they're being tracked on the go or in their own home. CEO Sundar Pichai kicked off the company's annual developer conference Tuesday, noting that the company wants to do more to stay ahead of, quote, constantly evolving user expectations, unquote, on privacy. In an appeal to concerns about constant location tracking, the company will begin enabling users of its digital maps to cloak their identities to prevent their locations from being recorded. The company is offering its new, quote, incognito, unquote, privacy control and amid face intensifying scrutiny over how much user information technology companies collect and sell for advertising. Facebook dedicated much of its own conference last week to connecting people through more private channels rather than broadly on the social network. Well, just a few minutes ago, we talked about the Wake County tax increase. It looks like the over in Pittsburgh, Chatham County's first tax increase in 3 years will help them build a new elementary school and other buildings and pay teachers more, says County Manager Dan LaMontagne. He presented his $125 million budget for the 19 and 20 fiscal year to the county commissioners Monday night. That is $11 million more than the county is spending now. Well, over in Durham, a developer is going small so downtown condos are more affordable. To create more affordable for sale units in downtown Durham, one developer is going small, and that's really small. The latest project from architects Scott Harmon and David Arneson, owners of Durham-based Revamp, the Durham and Center Studio Architecture, is a condo building with a wide variety of pricing, including many units under $200,000. Though to get to that price range, the cheapest units will be 400 square feet. studio units, and that's a size reminiscent of the model apartments in IKEA showroom. That is still much cheaper than the average condo being built in Durham, which usually ranges from $300,000 to more than $1 million at some projects underway. Well, Spirit Airlines, they have launched flights now to 7 cities from RDU. A Spirit Airlines flight from Baltimore landed at Raleigh-Durham Airport on Thursday morning, then returned to Baltimore with the airline's first paying customers from RDU. Spirit's bright yellow planes will be a familiar sight at RDU, where the airline now offers daily nonstops to 7 destinations, including Baltimore, Boston, Chicago, Detroit, Orlando, Fort Lauderdale, and New Orleans. Spirit becomes the 5th low-cost airline to fly from RDU after Allegiant, JetBlue, Southwest, and Frontier, which added nonstops to 8 more destinations from RDU this week. Like Frontier and Allegiant, Spirit focuses on leisure travels, offering low fares that require passengers to pay extra for things such as checked bags and drinks on the plane. Well, from Omaha, Berkshire Hathaway has underperformed the S&P 500 for a decade now, forcing Warren Buffett into a position he rarely resides on the defensive. At the company's widely attended annual meeting on Saturday, Mr. Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway's 88-year-old chairman and CEO, urged investors to keep the faith on a host of issues, including overall performance, his plans for future stock buybacks, and even transparency. On performance, he acknowledged that Berkshire has trailed stocks during a historic bull market, but argued it hasn't grown too big to beat the market in the future. It's a question of, can you invest truly large sums reasonably well, he said. He noted that his own will instructs that his Berkshire shares stay invested in Berkshire after his death until they are eventually distributed to a charity. He says, I have a lot of confidence in the ability of the Berkshire culture to endure and that we have the right people to make sure that that happens. I'm betting my entire net worth on that, he said. He also said Berkshire would be willing to spend $100 billion in buying back its own stock in future years if he thought it was trading at an attractive price. Berkshire bought back $1.7 billion in stock in the first 3 months of the year, and over the same span, the company's cash pile grew $114 billion from $111 billion. Well, while we own the market, this is from the Wall Street Journal, says after a brutal 2018, stocks, bonds, credit markets, commodities, and even cryptocurrencies have risen in 2019, with some asset classes such as U.S. equities recently scaling records. Nearly 90% of the 70 financial asset classes tracked by the Deutsche Bank posted positive total returns in dollar terms this year through April, according to the firm's strategists Jim Reed and Craig Nicole. Total returns captured the effects of both price movements and cash received, such as dividends or bond coupons. The performance represents a remarkable turnaround from 18, when a record 87% of assets fell for the year. The uniformity is high by historical standards. In an average year, roughly 70% of financial assets tend to rally, Deutsche Bank said, using data that goes back to 1901. Well, Uber Technologies is gearing up for its landmark IPO this week. Please excuse me. They've taken steps to avoid setbacks that turned the debut of ride-sharing rival Lyft into a disappointment. A Among other things, Uber has trimmed its valuation and is now targeting between roughly 80 and 90 billion. That comes as Lyft shares have tumbled more than 20% from their peak the day they started trading in March. Uber executives also have discussed with their underwriters and Lyft's what went wrong with its rival's listing with an eye toward avoiding the same pitfalls. It's according to people familiar with the matter. One of those pitfalls was a big hedge related to a trade between investing legends George Soros and Carl Icahn that was seen as weighing on Lyft shares. Uber's lawyers have scoured Lyft's lockup agreement, which prohibits early investors from selling the shares until a time set after the IPO, and that's for the kind of loopholes that permitted the hedge so that Uber might close them ahead of IPO. Mr. Soros bought a 2.7% stake in Lyft from Mr. Icahn in the days leading up to the San Francisco company's IPO before buying the shares for about $550 million or $60 a share. Mr. Soros hedged a big chunk of the stake, people involved in the process said. Hedges, which can take various forms, are typically used to mitigate potential losses on an investment. While we're talking about the market, I want to talk about a strong dollar confronts clashing signs. A strong U.S. economy and comparatively high interest rates have underpinned the dollar's rise to its highest level in 2 years. The dollar backed off from a two-year high this past week after a Federal Reserve meeting and several key data releases presented investors with conflicting signals on the U.S. growth. The ICE, I-C-E, dollar index, which measures the dollar against a basket of six other currencies, stands just below the highest level since May of 17. The measure is up more than 5% over the past 12 months, boosted by comparatively high U.S. interest rates and expectations that the United States will outperform other economies. Higher rates make the greenback more attractive to investors seeking yield. Determining the dollar's path is important for companies and investors as their currency's movements ripple throughout the world and affect everything from corporate profits to commodity prices. E-commerce demand drove up employment in distribution centers, with warehouse operators stepping up hiring in April, even as job growth across the rest of the freight transportation sector slowed. Warehousing and storage companies added 5,400 jobs last month. That's according to preliminary figures the Labor Department reported on Friday. That's the fourth straight month of growth in a sector that includes fulfillment centers that process and ship online orders. The sector added nearly 70,000 jobs over the past 12 months. Courier and messenger companies that deliver packages to homes and business also expanded in April, adding 1,000 jobs. Well, over in Morrisville, a former shopping mall near RDU's to become office space is set to be transformed into new office space after two real estate investment companies bought the property in a joint venture. Equator Capital Management and OCS Capital said on Monday that they had bought the former Morrisville Outlet Mall at 1001 Airport Boulevard and planned to turn the property into an office project called The Factory. For years, developers have been eyeing the 25-acre property, which is prime central location near the airport and the RTP. A group of developers previously wanted to turn the mall into a Chinese cultural center, complete with a five-star hotel and retail businesses, but those plans fizzled around 2013. The development of the mall is expected to be completed sometime in 2020 and will create nearly 250,000 square feet of rentable space. It wasn't immediately clear how much the property sold for. John McDonald of real estate services firm JLL, which will be in charge of the marketing of the project, said the project's location will be very attractive to potential tenants. Right now, he says, Our suburban product is devoid of creative options, and this is aiming to bring a creative option directly across the airport, directly across from the airport. It is in the bullseye of the triangle, and you could attract talent from Durham and Raleigh. Well, the Department of Justice has given the go-ahead to IBM's $34 billion takeover of Raleigh-based Red Hat. That's according to a Monday morning filing with the SEC. IBM said in its filing that the Justice Department gave the approval Friday and did not find any antitrust violations that needed to be resolved. The deal still needs approval in other jurisdictions before it can officially close. The merger is expected to officially close sometime in the second half of this year. The deal between the two tech companies wasn't expected to face any hurdles from regulators when the deal was first announced last October. In January, Red Hat shareholders also approved the deal in a vote. IBM, which has a campus in the RTP, has said it intends to keep Red Hat based in downtown Raleigh. The company has more than 2,000 employees at its headquarters, making it one of the city's largest employers. Red Hat has been downtown since 2013 when it moved its headquarters from Centennial Campus on the state campus, bringing around 600 employees at the time. Worldwide, the company has approximately 12,600 employees as of August. Well, we reported on Durham, the development firm that's going to build smaller square foot condos. Here's a developer who looks to add even more apartments to downtown Durham. It says a New York apartment builder is proposing to add hundreds more apartments to downtown Durham, an area that has seen thousands of new apartments added in recent years. Park Grove Realty, a Rochester, New York based company, submitted plans earlier this year to Durham City County Planning Department for 240 apartments at 510 East Pettigrew Street. That's land that was once part of the Hendrick Automotive Car Dealership. Park Grove bought the land through a subsidiary in February for $4.1 million. That's according to county records. The roughly two-acre parcel of land is near several other apartment projects and is within walking distance of the downtown core and the DBAP. Of course, that is Durham Bulls Athletic Park. The plans show that the building would be six stories tall and would come with a 114,000 square foot parking garage with room for 480 spaces. Efforts to reach Park Grove by phone were not successful. Well, a Johnston County pharmaceutical manufacturing site is investing $70 million to make its production facility purely solar-powered by next year. Novo Nordisk, a Danish pharmaceutical company that houses a massive manufacturing center in Clayton, has announced a $70 million investment into a 105-megawatt solar energy installation to be built in Pender County. Construction on the installation began in March and is planned to begin powering the Novo Nordisk plant by early next year. The facility is being built and operated by Cypress Creek Renewables. That's a California-based solar company, and is expected to be one of the state's largest farms. Interest-only mortgages are surging in popularity with commercial landlords across the United States. That's fueling fears, though, of a return to crisis-era loose lending and a spike in defaults if the economy takes a dip. Interest-only loans accounted for 77% of the $16.5 billion of new commercial mortgages in the United States during the first quarter. That's according to data provider TREP, and up 68 cents from a year earlier. Combined with partial interest-only loans, which allow borrowers to pay just the interest for an initial period, the total reached 89% of all new commercial mortgages in the first 3 months of the year. It is the highest level since 2009 and in line with levels seen in the buildup to 2008 financial crisis, when banks such as Washington Mutual and Wachovia ultimately sold at knockdown prices to J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo, respectively, made aggressive but ill-fated moves into the commercial property market. The trend means greater risk for lenders, which face bigger losses on the unpaid principal if stretched borrowers start to default on their loans. If the economy weakens and the commercial property prices begin to drop, the collateral backing the loan also falls in value, increasing the threat of write-downs that could open up big holes in lenders' balance sheets. The interest-only phenomenon is a late-cycle indicator and definitely a red flag, so said Christopher Whalen, chairman of Whalen Global Advisors. He goes on to say, when you are just rolling your debt and not paying principal, you're on the road to perdition. The growth of interest-only mortgages is a sign of more intense levels of competition within the industry, so said analysts, where regional banks are battling with private equity firms and insurance companies to build market share. Regional U.S. banks, including Fifth Third of Cincinnati and Atlanta SunTrust, now account for 70% of all new commercial mortgages, and that's up from 11% in 2013, according to data from Bank of America, Merrill Lynch. Meanwhile, non-bank financial companies account for 10% of the market, and that's up from 7%, and they typically offer riskier loans, according to B of A. In order to win deals, you're seeing more and more lenders loosen standards and offer more interest-only loans, said Joe McBride, head of research at TREP. And analysts note that the interest-only loans are generally less risky than they were before 2008. The average loan-to-value ratio on these interest-only loans stands at 55% so far this year, compared to 69% in 2007. Well, Dominion Energy, the Virginia firm, which along with Duke is fighting to resume construction on the $7.8 billion Atlantic Coast Pipeline, plans to take its case all the way to the Supreme Court, calling the regulatory process for the ACP very frustrating. Dominion Energy CEO Tom Farrell says the company is not backing down from the project as planned, which, if built, will pump fracked natural gas from West Virginia through Virginia and into North Carolina. But environmentalists, represented in court by the Southern Environmental Law Center, don't plan to back down either. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. Content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and the broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org.